As the bad weather rolls into the Royal County once again, Reading FC are placed in the eye of the storm once more as the EFL referred the club to an independent regulator as of today over non-payment of monies to HMRC. Welcome to Tyler's End Podcast, episode 357, where we attempt to pick through the dark clouds and aim for blue skies heading forward. Join me tonight, as always, is Ross. But first, we have a newly appointed, is that right to say, Sarah? Newly appointed Chair of Star Supporters Trust at Reading. How's the job going so far? Nice and quiet, I gather.
Yeah, I took over in September and it's not been great, to be honest. Very difficult.
Well, we'll get to as much as we are allowed to talk about along that later on. Ross, did you see my tweet yesterday about Halloween and being a Reading fan?
Oh, you run it by me again, Ben, for sure.
it was just a conversation I had with an imaginary person about me being celebrating Halloween and me saying that I'm a Reading fan and every day's a horror show. And
I like to imagine that for podcasters, you know, when you have an internal voice, you also have like your internal co-host in the back of your head. So, you know, when you were writing that, if your imaginary voice was there, that was me. Don't worry, Ben. I'm here for you.
Yeah. Don't think you liked it though, did you? Which is a little bit awkward, but
I'll get that going while you're giving some analysis later on. Quick thing I'll mention, guys. Obviously, I think some of you know that I'm based out here in Maine, near Portland, USA. And we're about 30 minutes south of Lewiston, Maine, where there was an awful shooting last week. Really affected the community massively. And I just wanted to give, you know, I'm sure there aren't that many Maine-based Reading fans. I haven't met any others out here for sure. But I just wanted to offer my condolences to, you know, the area and the town of Lewiston. And obviously it's sad news. Unfortunately, this podcast isn't going to be one to raise the mood there, but I just wanted to offer my sympathies there.
No, well, yeah, it's horrendous, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in the world at the moment. But yeah, it's obviously from Ross's point of view, I was so worried. I texted you at like 4 a.m. our time, didn't I? I saw the news pop up. I nipped to the toilet and saw it. And I was like, oh, no, Ross, but he's fine. He's all good.
Everything's safe. Everyone's happy. But yeah, looking out for the community.
Yeah. Well, normally, you know, as regular listeners know, we would get straight into the last match action. But we're not going to do that today because we are recording this on Wednesday evening, shortly after an announcement from the EFL has been published to do with the state of our club once again. So that's kind of going to be our recap, which we're going to get into in just a moment.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Alrighty, before we go any further, just want to say very massive thanks once again to ZCZ Films. We seem to be bringing you constantly bad news on this pod this season, as I'm sure other Reading podcasts are. But, you know, we must appreciate them sticking by us and kind of helping us out. Also, as well, just to kind of make you aware that there is a weather bomb currently circulating around the UK. So if we do cut out or there's any kind of noise interference or whatever, then we will do our best to kind of patch that up and go forward. Full disclaimer about the weather. Right, Sarah, we are, what, 8:15 on Wednesday evening, a couple of hours after the latest EFL communication. I saw someone say that we've had more EFL statements than wins this season, which is, it's quite a feat really for a league football club, isn't it? Obviously we need to be sensitive to your position, so you know we're very grateful that you've agreed to join us. Obviously it was always in the pipeline regardless of this news, but can you just kind of sum up what that statement currently means for us at the moment without giving your opinion, if you can?
Well, because of the non-payment to HMRC, EFL felt that it had to go on to another body for acknowledgement to see what would happen. So they've referred it on to the Independent Disciplinary Commission, and that will lead to further sanctions. So they haven't said what those sanctions are, whether that's financial or a points deduction, but that will be discussed by another commission and then they'll let us know.
So in terms of the timescale for that, because obviously, you know, the pattern has been EFL say, right, you've done something wrong, whatever that may be, in our long line of offences in football terms, and then we're very quickly punished as a result of that. Do you, based on the information, the factual information that you've got, will this be a long drawn out, okay, well, we need to go through loads of documents and accounts and everything else to work out what the punishment should be? Or are we talking pretty immediate, you know, sanctions that are going to hit the football club as a result of this issue?
I think it's going to be quite quick because this is non-payment from September and October. So they're pretty on it, I think. They're obviously fed up with the way that Reading are being run. They're really frustrated with what they can actually do. I mean, we can all complain about the sanctions that the EFL put on Reading, but at the end of the day, if we were paying HMRC and paying the wages, we wouldn't have had those points deductions. So they're as frustrated as we are.
You know, and I guess the thing really is that we're not talking about a loose change here, are we? We're talking about a fairly significant chunk of money that's not being paid, not 1 month, but 2 months. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, not our current owner, because I don't want to waste time on that, really. But we will talk about, you know, particularly one potential owner that kind of arose over the weekend later on. But, you know, Ross, in terms of where you are as a Reading fan, you can give your opinion. Where are you at right now? How do you see this going for the football club, for the players, for the fans, for the staff, for everyone connected with RG2, basically?
It's tricky. I think that the obvious place it's heading, if it is more points deductions, which it looks like it will be, then the obvious place we're going is relegation. And then beyond that, kind of, we were having a little chat about this before we hopped on tonight, but what are we still going to have available in February in terms of players and things like that? Because obviously this destabilizes some players. There are going to be players, and we picked up a lot of young players in the summer, right, who are not really going to want to stay here if they're getting offers from elsewhere to leave, even if they do still have large amounts of time on their contracts, you know, if they get offered a better opportunity to grow their career, because this is that's the step they wanted to take by coming to Reading, right, to get games and to grow their career. But if they're just going to be sucked into the mire and they're going to end up, you know, in trouble, ending up in a relegation fight every year, then you can see, you know, what's the point? You're going to destroy their confidence before they even get a chance to develop in the game. So, yeah, it's problematic. And relegation definitely looks like it's looking pretty likely if the points deductions do come in, unfortunately.
I think, you know, looking back, you know, you mentioned the R word there, and I'm in full agreement on that. But, you know, looking back, in terms of events actually on the pitch over the last, you know, week or so, with, you know, the loss to Fleetwood, which was just, absurd. And then, you know, fairly hard fought loss, if there is such a thing, against Portsmouth. You know, I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that we're 8 points adrift now. We're always going to get extra points deductions. My personal opinion is that this will result in quite a significant points deduction now. And that will be the end of our season, effectively. And I've kind of made peace with that over the last week. Like I wanted us to be competing at the top end of League One, as every Reading fan did. Did I expect it? Probably not. But that was the kind of the outside dream that I had. In terms of now moving forward, you know, whilst we don't know specifically what the punishment will be, we know that we're going to get taken points off. And even if we have 3 or 4, that's going to put us 12 points adrift. And we're not coming back from that. You know, we're not going to make up the ground on those other teams and the teams around us to be able to get that back. I mean, in terms of where we go from this now, you know, we are the 1st of November. We've still got a fair chunk of this season to go. Is it likely, and again, you know, this is based on kind of factual information rather than your opinion, Sarah, that the club will be taken over before, let's be really dramatic with our timescales here and say, you know, by the end of this season. Do we anticipate that there will be an ownership change in the offing before this season is out, basically?
I really believe that will happen. So it's really difficult to talk about the meeting that I had with the EFL today because there are reasons why we're not allowed to share conversations. However, one of the things I did ask them was what time frames are involved in doing the owner's checks. So if it depends where the funding is coming from an owner. So if it's a quite straightforward one person buying it, say, when they've had all the money, they can do their EFL checks relatively quickly. So that could be 2 weeks, 3 weeks. If the funding is coming from several sources and not based in the UK, that's a more extended process. So if you've got six owners, six money sources that have got to go through and find all the information, that's going to take longer. So it will all depend who comes in and where the money's coming from. But the EFL are ready to work on it. They will already be looking at people, prospective owners now, trying to start doing paperwork and due diligence on people. So, the process is underway.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because that's what we all hope for. We've had, and I don't want to give airtime to certain individuals that have cropped up previously, that have today ruled themselves out of buying Reading Football Club, and you can probably read between the lines of who we're talking about. but there have been some quite credible people putting their hats in the ring for this, which again, it's positive, and this is what I've always said about the club. Even when we were both at Star together, Sarah, we started looking at this process in January of 21 in terms of questioning the owner and where he, or the current owner rather, and where he was actually going with it. I mean, there's been a lot of talk today, hasn't there, Ross, about the EFL, about their role in this. Some fans going, well, it's all the EFL's fault. Some fans going, well, actually, it's just Di's fault. Actually, it's a combination of both. I mean, where do you sit with all this, Ross, in terms of the EFL's involvement with Reading Football Club? Because Sarah's kind of said that they're keen to get going on this, which is very pleasing to hear, because we want a resolution to this quite quickly. But where do you sit on that kind of, how culpable are the EFL with regards to this particular situation with our club? Is it all on Di? Is it 50-50? Where are you at with it, basically?
I don't think that there are any individuals at the EFL that necessarily wish us harm and are trying to hurt the club, right? Like, I don't think that the EFL is run by Swindon fans and they're all desperate to try and drag us down to their piddling level, you know? So that's not my concern. My concern is more, I feel like a lot of us have been in workplaces, most of us will have had similar experiences whereby issues are allowed to just grow and grow and grow for so long. And it becomes such a mountain to be able to fix it. And so I don't believe that anyone is individually trying to hurt Reading, but I think that the rules that they've been running with now for quite a while have created a danger for a lot of EFL clubs whereby the only way out from underneath an owner who is not doing, who is not making or not like following through on their obligations, the only way out is administration. And that's incredibly dangerous for clubs to go through, whether it does get you back into the league in a good way in the end. But we think about it over the teams over the last 15 years that have suffered. Portsmouth went all the way down to League Two. Obviously, they had issues, but the rules that the EFL was putting in didn't soften their like landing from like the those money issues or anything. They made it worse, and they went all the way down to League Two. And like I say, I'll say it again, I really don't think anyone at the EFL is trying to hurt Reading, but when you look at the kinds of punishments that they think that they are within their rights to hand out, which are mostly points deductions and transfer embargoes and other sporting penalties. After looking at Portsmouth, Bury, Scunthorpe, Macclesfield, it's just clear to me that this doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, then why are we still doing it? I think that it's always tricky because, putting more power into the hands of a state government could definitely be abused as well. But the independent regulator for me is really something that I'd like to see come in soon. I really think that it's almost like the EFL needs a visit from a consulting group and they need somebody to come in there and rip out all of the stuff that just doesn't work and then start again. Like I'll be more ballsy and pushy about it on Twitter and I'll say, oh, disband this, throw that away. at the end of the day, I just think that they've built themselves this mountain of an issue. They don't know how to deal with it, and they need another independent, if whether that be the independent regulator, consulting groups, whoever, they need somebody to come in and tell them these rules don't work. You need to change them because clubs are dying, and it's not just Reading, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think the two things are exclusive. I think you can be annoyed at the EFL, but you can also be, you know, annoyed at, it's probably a small word really, but you can be annoyed at Dye as well. You know, the two things go together for me. I think you have to,
You've got to remember that all this started because of Dai Young, though. I mean, forget the EFL and their involvement. And, you know, we can question that owner's test at the beginning and accepting Dai Young. But take that out of the equation. Dai Young is the person that isn't funding the club. You know, we are in this position because he is not or is unable or not willing to fund the football club.
So this comes back to the point I was going to make in terms of actually who watches the watches, right? So you can argue the point, actually, well, he failed two clubs already, so why was he allowed to own a club? That's by the by. To then, you know, get to this point from a, as we talked about, from a regulator point of view, from an examiner body, whatever, you know, in my line of work, I'm accountable to the Academy Trust and then Ofsted, right? So I'm watching, well, not watching, but I'm monitoring our staff. And they're, you know, they're watching me monitoring staff, basically. That's what needed in this situation.
But that's Henry why we've asked for Reading to be used for a test case for the new regulator.
Yeah, because, but what I would say is I don't want to be a test. I just want to support a football club, you know. And
I know.
We'll come on to kind of the you know, the protest group and everything else around that in a minute. But, you know, one of the guys on Twitter who I don't like is Henry Winter. He's the chief football writer for The Times. I don't know The Times as a paper anyway. But he summed it up perfectly, really. He says, and this was earlier today, a tweet that he put out in response to the EFL statement about Reading Football Club. Owners and directors' tests need to be even stronger at the start and then resources/behaviour tested regularly. And that's the absolute key, isn't it? You know, you look at, and we could do a whole podcast on all the other clubs, and, you know, we have great sympathy for them because we're in that situation as well. But, you know, you got Sheffield Wednesday today, and you've got Chancery saying, well, if you all chucked in 100 quid or whatever, like, it's just, it's absolute nonsense. You know, the sheer audacity to come out of a statement like that when you've underfunded the club, you've undervalued the club, you've underappreciated the support that a club like Sheffield Wednesday has is incredible. And what Henry's saying here in this very short tweet, or whatever we call them these days on the platform, is actually you just need to keep monitoring all the time. And my frustration, I guess, with all these clubs is that that's not done. And it, you know, you're right, Sarah, we obviously the main issue really is Dai. But actually the process behind, you know, them not just looking at Dai, but other owners in general in terms of, okay, you've got the football club, what are you going to do next? Here's your yearly review. Here's your performance management review, right? You know, are you still able to fund it in 5 months, 6 months, 15 months, whatever?
And that's what the regulator will do, though. So the regulator will come in and make sustainable, to make sure you have got that money to keep it going. Whereas the current tests are only to prove you've got enough money to buy the club. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that right now, or how it was when Mr. Dai was buying it was just about, have you got that money to buy it, not to sustain it and keep it running? And that's what the independent regulator will do. They will make sure that you're financially responsible to keep it going for a full cycle.
I mean, what, you know, moving ever so slightly away from the EFL and where we're at with them, the other thing that I really wanted to talk about, and, you know, obviously get your views on, Sarah, and how, you know, the weekend went was the march in terms of, you know, bringing the fan base together, because it has been split. You know, we know that. We know, but going back to our time on Star, that we had a lot of opposition at the time that we were doing things, and maybe there still is. And we'll talk about your ambitions as a chair for Star as a body moving forward, but, you know, how positive did you feel about the strength of feeling towards moving this football club to better days on Saturday? You know, what was your overriding kind of experience of what occurred off the pitch?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, we were asked by the police how many people would be turning up at the march, and we just didn't know, and you couldn't guess how many people. So we sort of said we were hoping for 500, which when we did the sit-in, we had about 300, if we're generous. So 500. It's a long walk, you know, it's a good 2 mile walk from the town centre. The weather forecast was rubbish. Reading fans, we just never know. Sometimes we just don't, we don't stand up. And about, I got there about 11 o'clock. There was about five or six people there. By 11:30, there might have been 40, 50. And it just built. And then by midday, I mean, I then couldn't count. I don't know. We'd lost control of how many people were there. So maybe 1,000 people at that point, all milling around in that area. The bar was rammed, people everywhere. And the emotions were incredible. There were people laughing, crying, hugging each other. It was amazing. It was really moving. The support from the politicians was brilliant. I don't know whether you've heard the speeches, but Jason Brock did an amazing speech from the council. John Ennis, bless him. He is a Reading fan through and through. And he did a brilliant, it was really good, really great speech. And then we all set off for the stadium. So by the time we got to the stadium, we think there was about 2,000 people there. As you walked along the main road, along the A33, where we lost complete control as marshals at that point, and everyone took over the whole carriageway. People were joining, parking in side streets, parking at Rosecombe Lane, parking and just getting out of their cars and joining in. The cars were all bibbing their horns on the other side of the road. It was literally incredible. It really felt like a massive moment. It felt like a coming together of all fans, all ages. There were people with dogs, pushchairs, people on bikes, wheelchairs, everything literally going towards the stadium. It really felt like a big moment and a big statement to anybody watching, to the club, to hopefully to Dayong, that we are all standing together as a fan base. We all want the same thing.
I think the positive is that he knows he's got to sell, and obviously he's actively trying to offload the club. I mean, Ross, you know, you couldn't be bothered to attend the protest, which is fine. It's up to you. If, at the end of the day, you've got to look yourself in the eye, haven't you, mate? You know, that's
exactly. Yeah, these are the decisions I've made.
What did you make of that whole, just the vibe, you know, on social media? Vibe's a bit of a crass word, isn't it? But do you know what I mean? Like, what was your, looking from, like, from afar, you know, eating your Lucky Charms or whatever you guys eat at Christmas in the morning. Sorry, what Halloween. Are we talking about? Absolutely not Halloween.
Thanksgiving, It was lovely. It was really good. I really liked what Sarah said about, like, all kinds of different fan groups coming in. And obviously I only got to see it through social media. The lovely thing for me to wake up to, you know, getting to see all kinds of Reading fans you know, watching them going down the dual carriageway and everything. That was great. So it really reminded me of when I feel like Reading used to get talked about all the time as a family club and a club that you felt comfortable, like, bringing your daughter or, you know, your young son and, like, stuff like that to a game. And you know that, you know, you're not in the rowdiest environment in the world, but you're also in a safe environment to enjoy your football. And that really came through for me, reminded me of the old days. So, I mean, having Dave Kitson at the front of it all also reminded me of the old days, obviously. But I think in the makeup of the fans, it's a great point, Sarah. It was really nice, hark back to when we were more of a family club.
I mean, John Ennis was, I thought, was very good. I got a lot of time for John Ennis anyway. I
think he's brilliant.
He's a great guy, and you know, it just shows you what you can do, I guess, in terms of these times and these situations, and it, you know, having everyone together and moving it forward. And you know, the ultimate goal really is to be blunt, is for you guys to not exist. Basically, that's what we want, you know, because actually, like, we're hopefully moving towards the end goal, and it might get worse before it gets better, but. The information that I have and the overriding feeling that I have is that it's gonna move now, and it's gonna keep moving, and that's the key. And I think, if you know, like you said, if there is elements of what I say you guys, but the group have done and Reading fans have done and can help other fans, you know, reclaim their clubs, then great, you know, that'd be fantastic.
Well, we've had amazing support from other supporters, trusts and clubs. So within sort of the Supporters Trust group, the FSA run workshops and things where we all get together regularly. And some groups have been literally incredible. I mean, the supporters group from Wigan and Bolton particularly have been just amazing. They've got so much time. I think I speak to the people from Bolton Supporters Trust at least once a day
Wow.
because they call to offer advice, suggestion. They're always looking at what we're doing, saying, have you tried this? Have you thought of that? It's just amazing. We've had solicitors come forward offering free legal advice. As you've seen, all the political support we've had, that's been amazing. Cross-party. So we've had Tories from Bracknell, plus the Labour, Matt Rodder, brilliant. James Sunderland's been so supportive from Bracknell. He'll do anything we've asked him to do. The letters he's written, the work he's done to the DCMS, it's just been incredible.
And how are you keeping up with your actual job?
Really poorly. Really, really crap.
You're not being sacked yet. They've gone, right, get lost. See you later. Go and do
I'm
something else.
self-employed, so I just don't earn anything. I mean,
Oh, there
today
you
has
go.
been absolutely mental. I
Yeah.
have to say, it's been a really difficult day with that EFL statement this afternoon and then coordinating a sort of a response from Star, because obviously we need to, people look to us for our comment on it. And that has to be carefully planned. You remember these processes, Ben? It's not an
Ooh.
easy process to get out a statement every
Well, yeah, I mean,
week.
some of the blockers have maybe not there, but the processes, I guess, you still have to get consensus, don't you? And that's not
Yeah. You
easy
have
at
to remember that
the
we're elected board members. So we're on that board to represent the fans. And that's what we need to remember. That's why we're there. So when something big has happened, we've got to take in sort of everybody's opinion on the way that it should be moved forward. And that's not always easy with 12 people with different opinions.
Well, Ross was talking about setting up an American Royals supporters trust, so maybe you can help him out
Which
and get
I
that
think
going.
there's already a few
Definitely.
of us out here, actually. That's it. We're actually, I will say, this
Get
is one of the,
together. Get
this is one of
someone
the, I feel like it's us and Malta. Like, I see Malta Royals every now and again, and maybe that's
out.
just because that's a good place to
Random.
go on holiday. But there's a few of us out here. There's, I know there's a guy in Colorado, and isn't Shake Fon the guy who made the
Where's
Reading version?
Dave? I don't remember.
Yeah, Dave is over here too. Yeah, so yeah, there's a few of us out
Of
here.
course.
I run into
Yeah.
Brits very, very rarely, but when I do, it's because of football. It's always football. That's the reason we run into each other.
It's the universal language of love, isn't it? That's what it
It
is.
really is. It really
Yeah.
is. Yeah. In a country like
Like what
this,
your
where you've
wife
got so many different people playing soccer from lots of different like areas, all kinds of things, lots of different languages. It's one of the best things about playing football out here
Playing
is that
what? What did you just say?
soccer,
Right.
sorry, the British word soccer, by the way.
A dollar or
But you
pound
get,
in the
you know,
jar.
you
That's another one.
all right, write that down. But getting like that mix of
Yeah.
Brazilians, you know, French guys, English guys, Americans, like it's just great, like seeing everyone's like take on the game. So anyway, please carry on.
Well, talking of takes on the game, we're going to head into the mailbag now. We've got sort of bits and pieces to look at, so we'll go into that now after this very short break.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, big news over the weekend, of course, was that we had helicopters in RG2 landed just outside the mega shop, as I like to call it, or a little bit further back. Owned Sarah by none other than Mike Ashley, and I know you can't give your specific opinions on any owners at this current stage, but our loyal listeners can. And we asked, one of the things that we put out was how would they feel about Mike Ashley, who is very well known in not just retail but the football world as well. You ask Newcastle fans and they've got very, very strong opinions on him. However, we're not Newcastle United. We are in need at the moment. And Peter Martyr, who regular contributor to our mailbag, he says, I think Ashley is a decent option for us. His inability to fund Newcastle to level required by their fans is very different to our expectations. Sensible funding for future progression and a long-term vision will be essential if new owners want the fan base on side. Opinions aside, facts are, Sarah, that we have not been run financially well at all. That's a bit of an understatement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would that be in terms of when potential owners are touted or investors are touted, would that be one of the main things that we're looking at currently for a new ownership model for this football club?
What, just be financially stable? Yeah, I mean, I think we've got to be realistic, haven't we? I don't think as Reading we're looking for someone to come in and invest millions and millions and get us to the Premier League. I think we've learnt our lesson, and what we're looking for is someone to come in. I feel like we keep saying this, but run the club sustainably. We just want to live within our means and have somebody that cares. Somebody that cares about the community, someone that wants to give back to the local town and the economy of the local area. Somebody that wants to listen and work with the fans and wants to communicate. So whether that's Mike Ashley or whether that's somebody else, I don't mind who it is, as long as they come in and will open up a direct communication with us and will move the club forward in a way that means we don't get these points deductions and the staff get paid. I don't think it's too much to ask, to be honest.
I mean, one of my drivers always been the community and you know, obviously the job I do and where I work, but also, you know, working with the Community Trust over a few years professionally, but also when I was with Star as well. It's a massive driver for me. And, you know, and you and I have sat in rooms with a certain CEO and has not engaged at all well with what we've tried to do, whether that's the Supporters Trust, whether that's, you know, other people, whatever. And so for me, yeah, obviously finance is a massive part of football, any modern football, any level. You know, we saw last week the Accrington Stanley guy who was saying basically, I can't take it anymore. You know, I can't move this club forward. But actually, you know, what we're looking to do here is just have solid footing in all those areas. That's all we need, just a benchmark to go, this is where we're at. Now we build. Now we bring the trust back. Now we bring the fans back. Now we bring the players back and so on and so on. I mean, Benjamin Vickers, again, regular contributors, Benjamin's mailbag, as Ross said last time. He's yeah. Pro-Ashley, good fit, seemed out of his depth at Newcastle, but we're smaller. Obviously had his ups and downs at Newcastle, but sold it on in a healthy position. Recall Keegan wanted Beckham, Lampard, Ronaldinho and Kaká for $400 million. Ashley told him to do something, which I won't repeat. That shows he values a sustainable club. I mean, Ross, Mike Ashley, shoot, what are we saying?
Do you know what's funny? I walk around with a Sports Direct bag whenever I go down to the Dome to play because I've got a Newcastle fan on my team who gets very upset when he sees that kind of stuff. So I definitely got that close range or that close proximity to Newcastle fans to kind of get their opinions. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I saw some tweet from a Newcastle fan saying, if you want to get, you know, like bottom six in the Premier League, then he's great. But if you want anything more than that, then you're in the wrong place. I'm like, bottom six in the Premier League sounds amazing to me. You know, like your team's on TV all the time. You can go down the pub and watch, like, you know, the fan base grows, all those kinds of things. So, yeah, I think that... I do agree that we're a different size of club and, you know, different owners will work well in different places for sure. I think that Newcastle are certainly a club that were looking to be more ambitious when they had Mike Ashley, so I can understand their frustrations for sure. And also with them having gotten relegated twice under him, I can understand why that's really, really frustrating for Newcastle fans. I mean, look at their stadium. They're a huge club. They're the star team in goal, the dream begins, all right? So they're an important team. Whereas no one's made us, you know, a movie about us having a Mexican wonder kid coming to play. So, you know, like, I don't know if that's any sort of...
One day they might.
So if that's an answer, then let's go with that. You know, like, I don't know how I feel about Mike Ashley is what this ramble should tell you. I really think that the Premier League and the Championship and League One are just completely different animals. And it's hard to know how a guy who didn't do particularly well in the Premier League would do in League One.
So I was talking to somebody about Mike Ashley and they were saying that he did so badly at Newcastle that it really hurt his feelings. He's got a really proud man. So if he did get hold of Reading, he would really want to do a good job because things went really sour at Newcastle. I have spoken to Newcastle Supporters Trust, who I think it would be quite clear to say not big fans, and said it would not be good for us. But like you say, we are a very different club. We're in a very different position, and we're probably not in a position to have, you know, our pick. It's going to be whoever comes in and thinks they can do something with our club. We're going to have to work with it.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, ultimately, you can't do a worse job than Dai Young's currently doing. No. It's impossible. You know, even if we got relegated into the National League or whatever, like we'd still have a club. That's the main point, because at the moment we're on the edge of oblivion. But, you know, ultimately, like, I look at the facts and I think he didn't really fail Newcastle, did he? He didn't live up to people's expectations. Like, he didn't run them financially into the ground. There was none of this, I'm not paying wages, I'm not paying tax, whatever. So for me, that's a benefit. Having said that, if there is another option, I'd probably take that, you know, but we're not in a position where we go, right, you know, we've got good people or interesting people, shall we say, sniffing around. And that's always a worry. It's like, you know, you put something on eBay and no one's interested, you don't sell it. The club is obviously attractive to certain people. The fact that someone like Mike Ashley's gone, all right, I'll have a little nibble of that, it's probably not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. So yeah, I think that's interesting in terms of how that will develop over time and whether or not someone else will kind of step into that. A little bit of an interlude before we move on, Sarah, another one for you. Bobbins, that little idiot Bobbins, has said, who'd win at Connect Four, him or you?
It would definitely be me. I've definitely got more strategy than Bobbins, for sure.
Yeah, I hate Connect Four.
Oh, I love it.
No. Ross, who would win out of me and you playing Connect Four if I could be bothered?
Can you count to four?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I'm just checking. Yeah. No. There's four downs in a football game, so I'm very used to them. So I'd win it. You know, the number four is good for me. Yeah.
It has been Halloween, and this next one brings back a few skeletons in the closet, particularly for Ross. So I'm going to start with him after I've read this. Alan Scott via email. We absolutely adore an email in the mailbag. We love it. So thanks for that. Alan Scott says, bring back Paul. Do you guys agree with me that if Paul Ince was still in charge, his team would be better set up to deliver in this league and would more than likely have us at the opposite end of the league? Pushing you further, would we be in this league? There's a lot of leagues. If Paul hadn't been removed, let's get this sorted. Ross, would you like to bat that one away first of all?
Like, now this is the second entity / individual that I need to be careful with my words about today, I guess. So not the emailer. Thank you very much for emailing in. We very much appreciate you. No, I do not think that we would be in the championship if Paul Ince had stayed. And no, I do not think that we would be doing much better. I can see where this question is coming from, for sure. Because we've seen a lot of teams playing more functional football in League One so far and doing it against us and doing it relatively well. So I can totally, totally understand where that perception comes from. Paul Ince takes your team's talent level and he puts a ceiling on it. And he stops you from being able to push past that. And I think that it worked for a while when we had like the motivation in the team. And when Tom Ince was sort of applying himself in the right way. And I think that that project had gone long off the boil for quite a long time before it was finally ended. So no, I think that we might even be worse off if we were still with Paul Ince. I do not rate him as a manager, and I'll stop there because I've definitely been clear about that in the past.
Yeah, well, I think we're all pretty clear on how you feel about Paul Ince, to be honest, Ross. Sarah, does Paul Ince do better than Ruben Sellers currently? Yes or no?
No. Yeah. I'm with Ross. I'm Team Ross on this one. Definitely not. Although I did see that Danny Drinkwater said that Paul Ince brought the best out in him. Which was interesting.
I don't think that's difficult at that point in his career, though, personally. I think I would have got more out of Danny Drinkwater at that point. I haven't addressed this, actually. I think the most frustrating thing for me about Paul Ince was that I was at the training ground I don't know what I was doing. I wasn't like I was supposed to be. I wasn't just like lurking in the car park or whatever. And he was literally like 3 days into the job, and I spoke to him, and he was really positive. Like, it's really good. And I, you know, hand on heart, he was one of my kind of outside Reading heroes growing up. I had the poster of him eating the Predator boots and the Inter Milan shirt. Like, you know, I wasn't a big fan of England, but I love watching him play for England, the commitment and everything else. And I think the fact that it went so horrifically wrong with the fan base was my biggest disappointment. Like, it's almost like, without being really emotional about it, but it was almost like it damaged the relationship sort of thing, you know? Like, he actually was all right. And, you know, I interviewed him for Star, you know, we did that Fans Forum, and he was great. Like, he was great. Him and Alex were fantastic. And I was like, wow, this guy. And I feel like I invested a lot of trust in him. And he was like, nah, get lost. Do you know what I mean? And that was the worst thing, really. To agree with you guys, I don't think he gets the better out of this team. I don't know who does, quite frankly, at the moment. I really don't. So, yeah,
the but main talking issue about we've football, had, on a just football. Just to sum that up quickly, the main issue we've had with Sellers, right, is that he's been stubborn and he's played that same midfield over and over and over again, and finally changed it this weekend. Paul Ince was just playing Andy Carroll over and over and over again, doing the same thing, hoofing the ball up to him. So if you want to get, you know, you just be papering over stubbornness with more stubbornness, in my opinion. Anyway.
And it was better this weekend. You know, we did kind of race into that 2-goal lead, and we thoroughly deserved that. The problem was that we don't have the mentality to enjoy it and to play football when we're 2-0 up, because we don't know what that's like. We haven't got any experience of that. So, yeah, but it was better this weekend. Right, Rob via email, and this is a massive one, so I'm going to try and paraphrase it. First of all, he goes on to say, absolutely love the show. It's the best Reading FC podcast I listen to. Correct. Ben, you're amazing. You are so much better than Ross. I don't know why he's on there. Because he doesn't contribute anything to proceedings. Sure. I know, Rob. Working with him every week.
I know.
But basically, he does say, he asks a lot of questions about the future of the club. All are very relevant. The first one really is, let's say we continue on the current trajectory of where we are, keep failing to make payments and getting points deductions, relegated this season and again next season. That puts us in non-league. What then? Which I guess is a rhetorical question. Is there a tipping point where it's no longer possible to continue functioning? Let's deal with that one first, Sarah. Are we at the point where the club ceases to exist, basically?
No, we're not going to be there.
What would make that happen, theoretically?
I mean, that's an impossible question, isn't it? I can't see that happening, because if things were getting so dangerous towards extinction, we would start looking at Phoenix clubs. Mm. So Reading would exist in some form. So even if everything happens, everything goes wrong, we'll still do something. We will have something here. We will have a football team in Reading regardless.
So even if that's hypothetically, and I don't want Caversham supporters to get upset with this, but if we started playing at Maple Durham Lock, for example, which is where I believe their men's first team play, I think that's where they play, that could effectively be a version of Reading Football Club. You know, the land, although, you know, obviously you've worked hard in terms of the council and how that is with the AC something, can't remember what it was called. ACJ?
ACB.
That I knew it was something. It was a B at the end. That's it. You know, obviously that we would still have a stadium at some point. It's just whether or not we can finance it to play there.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a reassuring positive. The next one really is reportedly, I mean, it's quite topical. Reportedly HMRC have been on the verge of applying a winding up order. Tick, because that's happened today. But what does that mean? Is this the same as bankruptcy, liquidation or administration? These terms get thrown around on social media and people don't fully understand them. I mean, Ross, do you understand what that means?
Not really. No, that's a confusing one for sure.
Sarah does, but she doesn't want to butt in. I can see it.
No, please let Sarah butt in. This is why we brought experts in.
Oh, no, don't call me an expert. It's a nightmare. So my understanding of the winding up petition is they will then give us a court date. And from the court date, if the judge then decided, he could then do a winding up order, which would effectively close the club. So I'm not sure we've got a court date yet. I was trying to find out earlier, actually, I couldn't see. But I had a conversation this afternoon with a solicitor who wants to try and help us all. And he was saying it will be down to a judge's opinion if we go to a court. And as fans, we have got a role in trying to sway a judge's opinion. So the more we can do to keep Reading at the forefront of everybody's mind and making them realise how passionate we are as a fan base and what we will lose if we lose Reading. So whether that's economically for Reading town or emotionally as fans, all of that will make an impact on a judge making a decision. So we've got to try and get ourselves in a place where judges would read it. So we've already had an article in the Times this weekend. I'm not being stereotypical here, but maybe High Court judges read the Times. Maybe they read the Guardian. I don't know, but we need to make sure we get information out in as many forums as we can to let people know that we're fighting for Reading and what it will mean to us as a town.
Well, look, myself and Ross can start doing two podcasts a week. I mean, no one would listen to them, but we can just be here and talking to thin air.
Right.
So yeah, we can definitely do that. But that's an interesting point, actually, you know, all jokes aside. That's a really pertinent point. And this is where the visuals of Saturday are so important, aren't they? Because actually, like, if you see that you can close the main road in and out of Reading on this side, you know, that's a massive driver in terms of actually, you know, this is how people feel. Ross, he goes on to say, is expulsion from the league possible? I mean, I guess that's just relegation, isn't it? They're not going to turn around and go, right, you can't play for the rest of the season, are they? I don't think that's on the cards, is it?
I don't know. Again, I would defer.
No, dude, this is why I've got Sarah on, because you don't know the answer.
No, but like I was going to say, eventually, you know, if you can't afford the cost for your fixtures to go ahead, that's when you would run into that sort of trouble, right? Like if you literally couldn't pay to turn the lights on at your stadium for a night game, for instance, which is something that has happened before to other teams. At that point, you know, you can't play your EFL games. And if you get to the point where you can't play like a decent amount of games, then yeah, you could be in trouble of being expelled from league. That's actually something that's concerned me a little bit. And I could be completely off base here, but as we slide down the leagues, if we are to get relegated this season, that stadium that we've got, especially if it's in League Two, is going to be a bit of a white elephant. It's a great place when it's full, but you know, when it's empty, it's going to be a little bit interesting if we become a League Two and League One club again, and we've got that to maintain as well as actually putting a team on the field. So that could be something whereby, you know, we have trouble because we can't pay our bills.
Different sport, different times. But when we first moved into the Madstad, Richmond, who don't, well, they probably do exist, but they don't exist as a professional rugby team, were playing at the stadium, who then ironically turned into London Irish, and that went south as well. But I used to go and watch Richmond play, because they had quite a few Welsh players at the time, and they would only open two stands. Mm. And there would probably be 2,000, 3,000 people, but confined to those two stands. I guess realistically the club would look to do that, but we, you know, I think that ironically attendances might increase if we got relegated, and you know, once the owner's gone, I think it changes the landscape of everything, you know. Mm-hmm. I will be able to do the half-time stuff, which I love doing. Star will be able to continue to be a lot more involved. The employees will be more open. It will just change the landscape. That's my opinion of where we're at.
Staff
will get paid, you know, their performances will improve, even though we're effectively being relegated. You know, the players will feel a lot more comfortable going out there and going, right, the shackles are off, let's just go for it. He kind of basically sums it up with, so my question is, can we die? And is it just a case of how far we have to fall before we rise? Sarah just closes off on that, you know, how much further have we got to go before we can start looking up?
I mean, you started off saying we've already been relegated. Basically, in your mind, you've accepted relegation. I still haven't accepted that. Logic tells me that we obviously are going to get more points deductions. And if we go into administration, that'd be another 12. So we would be down. But I still think there's a glimmer of hope. I still think something will happen and it will improve things on the pitch. It'll improve morale. It will improve everything. And somehow we will cling on into League One. If we go down to League Two, we go down to League Two. Is what it is. I don't think we're going to go any lower than that. But I've still got the belief.
Ross, where are you out of relegation? What are you thinking?
Like we said earlier, right? It's very much on the cards. If we're getting a points deduction that's beyond 4 points, then I'd say it's pretty much nailed on at this point. Because again, just getting cut adrift with a group of players that haven't been through a situation like this before, I don't think it's a recipe for success. So more than 4 points, we're probably down. Less than four, still in with a chance. You never know, but I think that's where I'm at with that, unfortunately.
I don't want to come across like the negative guy here at all. I've mentally prepared myself now for relegation. So if it happens, I'm not a bit like, oh, you know, but I do get what you're saying, Sarah. But in order for me to go, actually, we might be able to do this, is for the threat of points deductions to not be a consistent factor in our day-to-day running the club, and also that the club changes hands very quickly, and for that person to communicate with the fan base, either through you guys at Star, which we're going to talk about the last part of this pod, or just generally the openness that we need. You know, I look at so many other clubs and I just think, you know, like Bristol City, you know, Nigel Pearson went from Bristol City. Within 24 hours, their chief executive, or whatever you call him, was doing a video on YouTube and Twitter and saying, this is where we're out of it and this is why we're going to do it. That's all you want. Whether or not you agree with the decision is kind of irrelevant. Actually, what you want is someone to go, this is a decision we've made as a football club. This is why, and this is what our plan is moving forward. That's it. Whether or not it comes to pass is irrelevant, because actually, what's the intention here? You know, and we both know, and all the fans listening to this know, that he's never ever done that ever, and it's just boring and it's done, and ultimately what we need is transparency moving forward. Thank you very much for that, Rob. Appreciate that. It was a really long one, so hopefully we've done it justice with answering all of your questions. We're going to head into a sort of a preview, not just of stuff on the pitch, but also a preview of what is to come for the Supporters Trust at Reading, because obviously Sarah is the chair. Sounds a bit weird calling you a chair. Can't we call you like the leader or the head or something of it?
But the throne. Whatever. The throne of the Supporters
Trust. The throne, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The poison chalice.
We will be back in just a short moment, so stay with us on Talhurst End Podcast, episode number 350.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Welcome back to this week's Talhurst End Podcast. Big thank you, as always, to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, in these troubling times. Hope you are enjoying what you've heard so far. It's been an interesting one. It's been really good. Good stuff from Sarah so far, and average stuff from Ross, as always. We're going to talk a little bit about the football, which is nice. We have NK Dons in the first round of the FA Cup. Blah. That's you know that you're in trouble when you're in the first round of the FA Cup. All due respect to those teams competing at this level. Ross, first question. Do you care, yes or no?
yeah, I care. The FA Cup's a real trophy, right? It's not a pizza trophy. It's not a cup where Reading win all of their games 4-9 and 7-0 because the other team sent out some children and the mailman, right? So, yeah, I care about the FA Cup, and I think MK Dons will go for it too because they're used to playing in this round. I will say, by the way, I was talking about the stadium a minute ago, and that's kind of like my worry for Reading, is that we end up in a situation where we look a little bit silly in our stadium. Like, as much respect to them as you want, like, franchise teams don't bother me as much as an American resident. Yeah. Like, I don't want to end up looking like we have no fans sitting in a big bowl that's designed for Britney Spears concerts, you know? So, yeah, I think they'll go for it. And I'd hope that we put out a decent team. And honestly, like we've talked about before, we just need to build momentum from somewhere. So any game isn't a game that Reading could be turning up the chance of winning right now.
Well, Sarah, they're currently 12th in League Two, which is potentially where we're headed. I don't know why I'm laughing. I do that every week. No idea why. You know, I guess league positions kind of tend to go out the window in these cup competitions. They seem to be asking for an extra set of tickets, which doesn't surprise me because I don't think there'll be many Reading fans there. You know, we are led to believe that Ruben Sellers will still be in a job by that point. I'm not, you know, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But what does he do for that game? Does he just stick with the starting 11 that he had against Portsmouth on Saturday? Does he change it up? Does he stick with 4-3-3 rather? What does he do?
Who knows? I think I hope he plays some of the younger players, the ones that, you know, we've been seeing some really good stuff from some of them. And some of the ones that we've watched in the under 21 games have been absolutely brilliant. And to give them another option to get out on the pitch would be great. I personally don't want to see Dean on the pitch on Saturday. No. I want to see youth. I want to see what the future is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I hope he does stick with a new format, really. I hope he shakes things up again and is flexible and looks at who he's playing and isn't stubborn.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we're all agreed as Reading fans that the 4-2-2-2 is pretty much done. You know, there were glimpses of really positive stuff in the early part of the Portsmouth game. Obviously, we did collapse. Mm. We know that. But actually, you know, having the three and the three, was there was a lot more flexibility, a lot more interchangeable in terms of the attacking formation and the kind of the going for it. Defence is a whole other issue because that just didn't work. And I think we've pretty much nailed it why with your statement, Sarah. I mean, does it, you know, Ross talked about building momentum. Do you think it makes a difference if we win this game or not? Like, do we need a cup run? Are we confident of a cup run, basically, Sarah? Like, does it matter, is what I'm trying to say.
I think it always matters because a good cup run really gets you going as a fan. It's such a good feeling. Mm-hmm. We need the league wins, but a good cup run just changes everything. It changes the way you feel about everything. The excitement of who you're going to get in the next round, it's just brilliant. We've had some amazing nights down at the Mad Stad, haven't we, in cup games?
We have, yeah, and you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the cup too.
Whatever
I hope
team
we do well.
They will win. I don't think MK Dons would be massively interested in this game at all. You know, they've still got eyes on the prize in terms of trying to get to the playoffs this season. So I don't think they're going to be massively troubled or interested in this game. Might be doing them a disservice. Might look back on this, you know, 5 o'clock on Saturday and go, oh my God, what was I talking about? But I think, you know, based on the way the under-21s, well, particularly the under-21s, you know, they're massive winning the week. And obviously the under-18s last night winning. There's a lot of players now that are going, hold on a second. There's not going to be many of these players left in January if things continue the way they're going. They're going to be one at stake in a claim. And I agree with you guys. I think, you know, playing the youth and seeing a team that is going to, you know, help us build moving forward is positive. You know, we said that on the pod and generally at the start of the season that the positives was the youth and getting behind them and actually wanting to see them play. Don't feel like that now because he's intermingled some of those experienced players back in. It's just not working at all. No. So I think there's definitely potential for us to do well in this game. Having a week, I think, is obviously beneficial as well. So, you know, we'll see. But it's live down at the Select Carlisle Stadium. 3 o'clock kickoff, £15 for a fully grown adult, which, you know, is not necessarily all of the clubs doing, but it's quite a lot of money, isn't it, for what is essentially...
A lot of money. I'm a bit disappointed by that, if I'm honest. I think £10 would have been a much better price for that
game. Yeah, it's difficult because the gate receipts are split, aren't they? That's the problem. So it's, you know, for every ticket they get 750 and we get 750. So it might be them saying, you know, charge the absolute maximum, and obviously we'll do the same to our fans. You don't know.
When do we get Ben back on the pitch at half time?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is it. The club are up for it. I'm up for it. I think it's just bigger fish to fry for a lot of people at the moment. And it's, I would do it in a drop of a hat. They're still up for me doing it. But I think until things have calmed down off the pitch, it's probably not going to be soon until we get.
Well, maybe when you go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, so you're just worried that we'll throw tennis balls at you?
Yeah, I mean, someone, we had it all set up for, I think it was the Bolton game, was it? I don't know when the last community game was. And there was other stuff that was planned. There was like a freestyler, and the kids were coming back on the pitch to do the half-time penalties and stuff, because that stopped as well. And someone I won't name rang me and said, look, I've got to pull it all because I don't want you getting hit by a marble. And I was like, well, I'm not going to sue you, am I, if that happened? And I was like, actually, to be honest, you're probably the only person that would not want to see me get hit by a ball. That could be the game. You know, what can we lob at him to see what knocks him over? So, yeah, look, it's still there. The willingness is still there. The ideas are still there. It does need investment. It does need money to make it better. But
maybe Ben, when you do get back to it, we can call the podcast from the center circle, you know, at halftime.
That'd be amazing. That'd be wicked.
That'd be entertainment for the masses, you know. Just hold Ruben, actually. We need to get to the mailbag next.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Just need to mention the sponsors, yeah.
Maybe
I wasn't encouraging people to throw things at you either at that point. Just make that clear.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Star could sponsor me to do that. I don't know.
We'll see. Maybe that's a conversation we can have.
Maybe that is a conversation we have. And talking of Star, you know, obviously you have ascended the ranks to the highest echelons of supporters' trust hierarchies. Yes. In all seriousness, now, it has been difficult. I know that, you know, you obviously are fully aware of that. The current environment is not easy. However, what, apart from the obvious immediate one, what are your plans to drive Star moving forward?
Well, I think we've got a huge opportunity. We have got some new people on the board. We've got a lot of enthusiasm to change things. We're not a perfect organisation, and I think we can recognise where things have perhaps gone wrong in the past. But we need to represent all Reading fans. We need to make it really clear that we are the official recognised body of Supporters Trust and take that role seriously. I think some of the communications we've had with the club in the past have potentially not been challenging enough. And we've got a role to play to be that critical friend of the football club, to look at what they're doing, to have good communication, which doesn't have to be just agreeing with everything they're saying, but to try and push them forward. The communication needs to improve from us and from them, and that's something we're really going to try and focus on. There's obviously lots of practical things we're going to try and do with operational side of things, like the catering. Fan experience is a continual thing that Star will do. But we want to be, I think, going forward, we need to be more like the trade union, really, of fans. So representing people and having those difficult conversations with fans or the club, and just trying to be more as one with everybody. We've done, Sad Before We Die has brought together the fan groups in a really amazing way. And I think we've all realised the wealth of knowledge that we've all got, and the fact we've all got a common goal. Everybody wants the same thing. So Star, Tyler Sound, and Park Royals, everybody wants the same thing. We all want a really good, sustainable football club that we love and we have fun going to watch. And Star's got a role in pulling together all those people and all those groups and trying to represent everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is difficult and it has been difficult. And it's, I mean, what's interesting is that I saw, and I'm not going to name them, but I saw someone on, I keep calling it Twitter, it's not Twitter, but you know what I mean. Social media in general, who used to be quite a heavy critic of Star, And as now turned around and gone, do you know what, I've signed up, I'm a member, all the rest of it. And I thought, actually, do you know what, if those people that were previously anti the group and the ethos behind it and now starting to go, do you know, I want to be part of this, that's the biggest you know, source of optimism that you can get, really. That's the biggest endorsement that you can have. And it's without going down the road of, oh, there goes David Brent, I must remember to thank him. It's kind of one of those where actually the tables have turned quite a lot now, and I think people are realising how important supporters' trusts are, not just at Reading Football Club, but in general, you know, because they're at the front and centre of it. You know, you've said you've had meetings today with the EFL. That's a big thing, right? That's an access point that most fans don't have an opportunity to. And I, you know, I always find it a bit difficult because I feel like I have a responsibility to certain employees at the club who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, but I also get from where the fans are coming from. And that was the same with Star, you know, when I was working with him, that's how I felt. I mean, Ross, in terms of where you're at with it, you know, how important are these groups going to be, not just for making the change now, but for making sure that the club is governed in the right way moving forward?
I think they're crucial. Something that's going on over here at the moment, we're getting a USL One team, which is actually amusingly the same tier as Reading now. It's third tier in the US. And we don't have a name yet. We don't have a badge. We don't have colours or anything like that. We've just got a start date and a supporters trust. That's what we've got. So the first thing basically that went in and got set up was the supporters trust. So the guys who are setting up the team have a group of invested people who haven't even seen the team play yet, which is quite funny, who are, you know, able to give just their opinion on like how the winds are blowing with the team and how the fan base is feeling about the team. So I think that it's super, super important. And especially as we're like marching more into an age where everyone's online, everyone's connected, you know, people can share opinions like that, whereas previously, oh, maybe they could get a letter to an editor or something like that. It's really, really important to have, you know, having the supporters trust there to be able to sort of put some weight behind your opinion.
I think we're stronger together. I think that's the one message I would give to all fans of Reading. If we can have, we can all band together and get our voices heard together, we're going to be stronger. People are going to listen to one voice and we all want the same thing. Mm-hmm. So join Star.
Yeah, we want it to be fun. That's what we want. We, you know, win, lose or draw, I want to feel like I've had an experience at the game and it's not been turgid and boring and stale, basically, which is what it is now. And we understand why that's the case. So, yeah. And there's a, you know, reiterate, there's a lot of good people working at the club and there are some good people on the board at Star. One of them being you, Sarah. I'm not just saying that. We don't get any old loser on this podcast, even though two present it, but like, you know, it's been really good to kind of talk to you. And you know, me personally, fully behind what you're trying to do. I think you're the right person to move it forward, and you know, I'll help you in any way that I can in any unofficial capacity, basically. So
that's much appreciated. Well. Thank you.
That just about sums it up. This is a long one. This has been a really non-football based podcast for a podcast that is, what, are we 100th? We're in the top 100th now, aren't we, for independent
something UK like that. I think a lot of, rather than blowing smoke up my bottom, I'll just say I think a lot of Reading fans are going to need a nice long therapy session today. So, you know, if we've given them a longer podcast, then I hope this was a way to take your mind off things for a little while. Yeah.
It wasn't quite as miserable as I thought it would be. Earlier on tonight, I thought this is going to be grim, but
we deliberately left it, and you know, we normally do it Monday, the latest Tuesday, but you know, we hope that there would be some positive news. Obviously, that's not transpired, and you know, you've got to go there to come back, as the Stereophonics once sang, actually. So yeah, hopefully we're kind of on that road and we can move it forward, and we'll be back next week with more podcast content for you, talking about the MK Dons performance, result, all that kind of stuff, kind of probably Monday or Tuesday, probably Monday, but we'll be here. Sarah, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time. We know that you are incredibly busy and we know that we are probably the least important people that you've talked to today, but We appreciate you all the same. So
it was keep the most going. Enjoyable one, though.
Well, exactly. And Ross, as always, mate, thank you so much.
Thank you. Guys, remember, weeks like this, just remember, when it does get good again, it's going to feel really good. It's going to feel really, really good.
It's going to feel like an ice pop on a really hot day.
Exactly, yeah, that first sip of beer on a
Calippo.
Friday.
Am I allowed to say Calippo? I've said it now anyway.
Whatever. All right.
Listen, thank you very much for listening, guys. Thank you very much for giving up your time to indulge in whatever this was this week. We'll be back next week with episode 358. And we will hopefully be talking about a Reading win at the weekend against MK Dons. Look after yourselves, all the best, and we will see you next week. Come on, you Rs.